I'm Professor Marcus de Sotoy, and in this podcast of the third episode of A Brief History of Mathematics, first broadcast on BBC Radio 4, musician Brian Eno tells us why he loves the mathematics of Joseph Fourier, an 18th century French mathematician, Napoleonic soldier, and servant of the French Revolution. In May 1798, the mathematician Joseph Fourier received a mysterious summons from the Ministry of the Interior in post-revolutionary France.
Citizen, the Executive Directory, having a particular need of your talents and of your zeal, has just disposed of you for the sake of public service. You should prepare yourself and be ready to depart at the first order.
2 months later, Fourier set sail for Egypt, recruited by Napoleon along with 30,000 soldiers and more than 100 academics, Napoleon's intellectual army. Now, I'm a mathematician. I like to explore the world of mathematics for its own sake, without worrying unduly whether it will be useful. But this is the story of a young republican who believed mathematics should never forget its role as a servant of the French Revolution. A man for whom the real value of mathematics was its usefulness to society. And useful it proved to be. Fourier's groundbreaking theory of heat led to new ways of understanding not only heat, but light and sound, with some amazing spin-off benefits. Music producer Brian Eno.
Fourier's breakthrough was to realise that fundamentally there was only one kind of waveform, so it was like an atomic theory of music, if you like.
This, for Fourier, and for me, is the power of mathematics. Its ability to generalise results beyond their original context, and to find applications far beyond anything anyone might have expected.
A Brief History of Mathematics with Marcus de Sotoy.
Joseph Fourier, the orphan son of a tailor, discovered the magical world of mathematics as a young teenager. At his military boarding school, he collected candle ends and studied into the night while the other boys snored. There was no one to supervise him, but it seems he didn't need anyone to tell him that he was good. He knew. He wanted to join the military, but his application was denied.
Fourier, not being noble, cannot enter the artillery, even if he is second to Newton.
But the French Revolution of 1789, which he supported, changed everything. The new republic in France founded centres of learning to cultivate the new thinkers of this revolutionary age. Students were chosen on the grounds of intelligence and knowledge alone. No one, it was thought, should be denied a place for lack of funds. And of all the disciplines, mathematics and science were the most highly praised.
Citizen, the revolution not only improves our morals and paves the way for our happiness and that of future generations, it even unlooses the shackles that hold back scientific progress.
And Fourier's talents, not only as a mathematician, but also as a teacher, didn't go unnoticed. He was appointed head of mathematical education in the new École Polytechnique. It was a real innovation to have mathematics taught by those who were actually creating it. For the first time, mathematical lectures became real performances. Professors had to deliver their lectures standing up, with no notes and no desk to hide behind. Dialogue and debate were expected between the lecturer and the students. Fourier, in particular, thrived.
He has a loud voice, is active, ingenious, and very learned.
A great performer, he loved giving lectures. And he'd intersperse his mathematical exposition with interesting historical references. And he always tempered the abstract side of the subject with more practical applications. Fourier's oratory skills had been put to use advocating the political revolution. Now they were employed in propagating a mathematical revolution. Before long, he was spotted by Napoleon himself and received that mysterious summons to set sail for Egypt. After the Battle of the Pyramids, Napoleon returned to France, and Fourier was left stranded in Cairo, not being sufficiently well connected to avoid the charge of desertion. In 1799, he helped to discover the Rosetta Stone, and it was here, in the middle of the Egyptian desert, that Fourier fell in love with heat. And not just the mathematics of it. He believed it had fantastic medicinal powers. When he returned to France, his friends would find him sitting in his wildly overheated room in Grenoble, wrapped up like an Egyptian mummy, sweating, and we can only assume contemplating the mathematics that would help him to explain exactly how heat behaves. Even before he'd answer the question he'd set himself, how does heat vary over time, Fourier knew just how important the answer would be, not just for the understanding of heat, but for the whole of physics.
Heat, like gravity, penetrates every substance of the universe. Its rays occupy all parts of space. The object of our work is to set forth the mathematical laws which this element obeys. The theory of heat will hereafter form one of the most important branches of general physics.
And his prediction was not wrong. Fourier's mathematical understanding of how heat varies has enabled us to understand anything which can be described as a wave. Heat, sound, and light can all be described as waves. And if understanding sensations like these isn't useful, I don't know what is. Here's someone who understands sound better than I do, music producer Brian Eno.
The great insight of Fourier was that every wave, however complex it was, could be expressed as the sum of lots of sine waves.
Sine waves are the simplest waves there are. On paper, they look rather like a child's drawing of the Loch Ness Monster, a series of smooth, regular, up and down curves. But what do they sound like?
A sine wave is the purest, simplest waveform, and very boring to listen to. Because it has no personality at all. It's a sound with almost no personality. For it to have personality, you have to add other harmonics to it. And of course, what distinguishes instruments from each other largely is the harmonic structure of them. You know, so a violin has a different harmonic structure than a trumpet, and you can class instruments by their harmonic structures, like a lot of woodwind instruments have similar harmonic structures. But that was not at all evident at the time of Fourier. They all just sounded like lots of different things.
Every sound can be described by a waveform. If you've got an equalizer on your radio, the dancing lights jumping up and down right now represent a simple waveform of the sound of me coming from your loudspeaker. The simplest sound wave there is this. The pure sound of a tuning fork. It's called a sine wave, or the Loch Ness wave, if you prefer. This, however, is a much more complicated sound. The waveform looks like a kind of mountain range with countless peaks, all of different steepnesses and heights. Fourier believed if he could get to the bottom of all these different waveforms, break them down into their simpler pieces, then he'd be onto something. He was looking for the underlying principles that determine their very different shapes. And his revelation was this. Every waveform, no matter how complicated and jaggedy, can be broken down into a basic set of simple, smooth sine waves, those Loch Ness lookalikes, like this one. Or, put another way, if you add up lots of simple sine waves of different frequencies, that is, Loch Ness curves with the bumps more or less squidged together, you can reproduce the jaggedy mountain-like profile of the trumpet. This is the grammar of waveforms. It explains how they all relate to one another. And this is what Fourier's groundbreaking theory of heat was all about. Fourier studied heat, but his mathematical analysis applies to sound as well. In fact, it works for anything that can be described as a wave. As Fourier says,
mathematics compares the most diverse phenomena and discovers the secret analogies that unite them.
Fourier's analysis of heat is a brilliant piece of pure mathematics that explains the behaviour of heat, light and sound and plenty else. But when he first published, his mathematics met with some vigorous opposition. Many fellow academics were sceptical. It seemed impossible that smooth sine or Loch Ness waveforms could ever produce such complicated, jagged-edged waves of, say, the trumpet. Leading mathematician Pierre-Simon Laplace wrote,
The manner by which the author has reached his equations is not exempt from difficulties, and his analysis to integrate them still leaves something to be desired, even on the side of rigour.
And believe me, to accuse a mathematician of lacking rigour is tantamount to telling Brian Eno he's tone deaf. But Fourier remained confident and continued working on his treatise, publishing the final version in 1822. Coincidentally, the same year that the Rosetta Stone was finally decoded. It took several years for Fourier's achievements to be recognised, but when they were, there was no holding back on the praise. Lord Kelvin, the man after whom the modern scientific unit of temperature is named, declared,
"Fourier's is not only one of the most beautiful results of modern analysis, but it also furnishes an indispensable instrument in the treatment of nearly every recondite question in modern physics. Fourier is a mathematical poem."
Fourier's early prediction that the theory of heat will hereafter form one of the most important branches of general physics was spot on. It describes not only heat, but light and sound, anything, in fact, that can be described as a wave. It gives us a way of thinking about these very real phenomena. It's also the reason your radio, CD player or iPod works. They simply tell your speaker to vibrate to create all the simple sine waves or Loch Ness waves that make up a particular sound. Played simultaneously, these simple waves miraculously recreate the sound of me, an orchestra, or Brian Eno in your living room.
And now there's a new generation of processing tools which are based on fast Fourier transforms, which means real-time transforms, where what's happening is that the computer is looking at sound in exactly the way that Fourier suggests, breaking it into individual waveforms, and therefore allowing you access to parts of the sound that really you never could get to before. Particular harmonics, for example, which you could then delete or change or amplify or slow down or whatever you want to do. So the modern translation of Fourier is that we now can get inside sound in the same way as a nuclear scientist can now get inside atoms.
And this power to get inside sound has generated music that has never been heard before.
So I've just recorded a Chinese tea tray and turned it into a musical instrument like this. Okay, now if I apply a fast Fourier transform to it and then start doing things with the individual parts of the sound, this is the kind of result I get. See, there's a lot of personality in that, isn't there? A lot of movement within it. Just to remind you, that same sound without the fast Fourier transform is...
The amazing power of mathematics. Joseph Fourier believed...
The profound study of nature is the most fertile source of mathematical discoveries.
Fourier's study of heat, inspired perhaps by his time in the Egyptian desert, led, as he himself predicted, to one of the most potent mathematical ideas of all time. Fourier analysis, the grammar of waveforms. Fourier wanted his mathematics to be useful. It certainly is. Thanks for listening to this podcast from BBC Radio 4 with me, Marcus de Sotoy. And if you enjoyed this episode, don't forget you can collect the whole set, all 10 episodes of A Brief History of Mathematics, as well as the terms and conditions, can be found at bbc.co.uk/podcasts.